Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and happy Friday. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
We talked about Lucy Stone at last.
Mm-hmm.
Who we both thought we had done an episode on already, and we had not.
I mean, her name's come up a number of times in prior episodes, but not her own one.
Yeah, and I really, as I read about her and did more research, I really was just struck by what a good person she was. Some of it is very sad, though. Like, there's an incident early on in her life that I was like, on the one hand, like, this clearly shows the impulse of her heart to be very kind. And also, no kid should ever do that, which is that when she was still pretty young, she was quite sick on and off for like a year, but she didn't tell her parents and she hid it because she didn't want her mom to have to do her chores for her, which is the sweetest and saddest thing on the planet.
Right.
Like, oh, her dad is a mixed bag. I mean, she definitely seemed like she grieved him, but, and I think she loved him, but he wasn't particularly nurturing in a lot of ways. Like at one point, he said really unkind things to her about her looks and like, it's weird because there are a lot of writings about how, oh, Lucy was not very pretty. But then I've seen pictures and some of them, she's very, very pretty. And Henry thought she was beautiful. So like, this is not cool. Don't do that to your kids. There was a quote from her that really both broke my heart and that I really loved. Because she was talking about like the difficulty of being the outlier who is like a woman who refuses to fit into what people expect. She said, my mother always tried to submit. I never could. And how it just made her like angry to even think about it. That pay inequality that we talked about early on.
Yeah.
Her first real taste of it personally was that one of her brothers was a school teacher, and when he got sick, she substituted for him. And that is how she found out that women were making like half of what men were. She's like, I taught the exact same courses.
Right.
What's up with that? There was one thing about her relationship with Henry that I didn't include because I never really found a real source for it. And it's like a rumory, gossipy thing. But the place I saw it first was on the Library of Congress website, where they printed an image. They included an image of her protest pamphlet that she wrote with Henry. And they mentioned, like, hey, this wasn't all a sunny marriage. Like, there were rumors of infidelity on his part. And I'm like, what?
where? Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know where that is. It's only ever very like obliquely mentioned, and it's never. There's never any detail, which to me is like. So I didn't want to include it in the episode, but if you go looking and you see that, that's what's up. There are two other things about Henry that I wanted to mention. One is that not all of his family was actually okay with this marriage.
Oh, yeah.
Even though they all seemed to welcome her and be very friendly with her and admired her when he was like, we're getting married. Apparently, Elizabeth Blackwell in particular and one of their other sisters was like, were like, yuck, why are you marrying a poor farmer?
Right.
It's like, oh, no, I want to love you. Please don't be classist and gross.
Yeah, I thought about re-airing her episode since she comes up in this one, but we've already run her as a Saturday classic. And at least so far, we have not done a second round of Saturday classics for the same episode.
Yeah.
I don't know if at some point we'll revisit that because now we've been doing Saturday classics for so long that they were a Saturday classic years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. But at this point, we haven't been. Yeah. So
there's also this story about Henry, and this is aside from his weird racist open letter, which is freaky deaky. But this is, to me, funnier and less dark, although it is also not very complimentary of him, which is that at the women's convention in Cleveland, which I think was the 1853 one, he decided he would like to speak.
No, no. Oh, no. How'd that go?
He apparently rambled for like an hour about what it meant to be like a man and a husband that truly supports their wife. And I mean, I feel like I've actually heard this speech from people, but one of the papers made this comment that is so cutting, but also made me chuckle, which was he forgot it was a women's convention.
Whoops.
I'm like,
whoops.
That made me laugh real hard. I don't know how she would have taken that. You know, it's always hard to hear criticism of your beloved. And I'm sure they both heard plenty of it because they were very controversial in many ways. But it was kind of funny. I also didn't talk about the fact that she got thrown out of her church for being too radical at one point.
Oh, wow.
Because it was very similar to the way that things went down with her schools, where it was like, you have to stop trying to make everybody an abolitionist at your level. You're too radical about it. You need to ease people into these ideas. And she was like, nope. I marvel at her. There's also another beautiful story, and I debated over whether I could tell this because it's very moving to me for some reason, that I read in one of her biographies where they were talking about her at the end of her life. And we talked about how pragmatic she was, but that as her body was failing towards the end, it was like as a part of her body would fail, she would thank it for having taken care of her throughout her life.
Oh, wow.
Instead of being like, oh, now my leg won't move anymore. She'd be like, thank you, leg. You carried me a long way. I don't know if that's not a quote. I don't know if that's how she worded it. But like, what a beautiful way to approach the end of your life, like being grateful for everything, especially for someone that had not had an easy life.
Right.
She seemed to always kind of lead with gratitude, which is a really admirable and beautiful thing. Anyway, I have a lot of admiration for Lucy Stone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there was some way in which she was a pill, but gosh, she mostly seems pretty great. I don't understand the thing with her husband's weird racist rant, and I don't know how she handled it, but that will have to stay a mystery. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
This week on the show, we talked about Ruth Fulton Benedict. And I am pretty sure the first time I ever heard her name was an episode of the TV show Designing Women.
That seems right.
There's an episode where they go on a trip to this like health spa, and Suzanne decides that she's going to get revenge on Julia and Mary Jo by memorizing all the answers to the copy of Trivial Pursuit. And so she bought 2 copies of the game, one of them to freshly unwrap while they were there so it would look like it was a brand new game. But she bought a second copy. I'm not really spoiling anything of this 30-some-year-old TV show. Maybe longer than that at this point. This is the setup of the whole thing. But they have several of the, you know, of the questions that they ask. And one of them is something like, you know, this anthropologist wrote the work Patterns of Culture. And Julia and Mary Jo in unison go, Margaret Mead. And Charlene goes, wrong. And that has really stuck in my head. So sometimes I'll just be minding my own business and my brain is like, Margaret Mead, wrong.
That's great. And
then Suzanne goes, please, Ruth Benedict. Like it's the most obvious thing in the world. I have a lot of love for that show. There are many aspects of it that have not aged well. And that episode has a lot of them. So. Just be forewarned if you go to look that up.
It's a delightful show that was written in its time.
It was very written in it. Yes. So, yeah. There is a lot of body shaming in that episode in particular. So I really struggled as I was writing this on how much to focus on the many things you can criticize about Ruth Benedict's work. Because we are talking about anthropological texts from like 100 years ago at a time when the field was early in its process of trying to break away from a lot of Eurocentrism and racism, right? So it's just,
It's got an underpinning that's fraught.
Yeah.
But like, I wanted to talk about her life and her work and her influence, and also acknowledge that, like, if you go read this, there's a lot of stuff in there that is imperfect at best. I watched a lecture that was about the chrysanthemum and the sword, which described picking it apart point by point as almost a rite of passage for, like, anthropologists who are going to focus on Japan. Like, this is sort of like a thing that everybody goes through in their education, is like totally picking apart her work, because it's so often something that was like attempting to come from a better, more thoughtful place. And then parts of it, you're like, this is not correct, though. She wrote a lot about indigenous cultures in North America. She wrote a lot about the, like, sex and gender in indigenous cultures, including people that we might describe as, like, broadly in the umbrella of, like, transgender history today.
Right.
And, like, I was not even comfortable using some of the same terms that she used in that, because while I think, like, that was the term that was used with her informants, it's a term that 100 years later has very different connotations, and it was just all very complicated. So I hope we were able to adequately acknowledge the fact that it's, like, as a body of work, it's going to be fraught, but also she was really groundbreaking and influential in a lot of ways.
Right. That's always, like, the trick. When there's a person who is, like, the most progressive person of a time,
mm-hmm.
and she was pretty progressive in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they are always the most progressive person.
Yeah.
Right. Because of the evolution of thought and culture, which I wonder if she would be fascinated today.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, everything has changed in so many ways so quickly. But I don't know.
Yeah. If you read, like, old biographies of her, there's no mention of Ruth Valentine. There's no mention of Natalie Raymond. There's maybe, like, rumor about her having a relationship with Margaret Mead. And as is incredibly often the case, this is not because the people who were writing about her 70 years ago, let's say, were, like, trying to hide something. Most of the detail that we have about all those relationships is contained in letters between Ruth Benedict and Margaret Mead. And Margaret Mead concealed all of those letters until, like, it was in the terms of her will that they could not be available for researchers to access until, like, the 1990s. And it wasn't just because of these relationships. A lot of it was just, you know, there's gossip in between them about people who were still alive
right.
at the time, right? And you don't necessarily want your personal correspondence with all of your gossip being open to scholars while you're still alive. So
I love the idea of her calculating, how long will all the people we talk trash about live? And when is it safe,
when is it safe to publish all these letters? It's really only been biographies that have been written since approximately 1999 that have talked more about these relationships, especially in a, either mentioning them at all or in a concrete way. Like the biography that Margaret Mead wrote of Ruth Benedict doesn't mention Natalie Raymond at all. It does mention Ruth Valentine. That quote that we read about her remaining quietly alive until Ruth Valentine got back from California, that's from Margaret Mead's biography. But Margaret Mead does not elaborate on that relationship in any way, which is unsurprising given that this was, like, a biography that she wrote in 1959. Right?
Yeah.
So anyway, if you read much earlier stuff, you get a very different view of her personal life and her love life, because that was the information that historians had to work from.
Right.
There are some biographies that are, like, from the 1980s or 90s, where there were interviews with people who were like, oh yeah, they were definitely a couple. But even then, like, It was many, many years after Ruth Benedict had died before any, like, people were willing to talk about that because there was so much stigma and so much illegality and all of that.
Right. I also always wonder in those situations where even if some researcher has come across hints of the reality of the relationship, mm-hmm. like, if it doesn't even occur to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, if someone who is very much heterosexual is doing that research, if it doesn't even cross their mind that this could be a romantic relationship, they're like, oh, they were just good buddies. Like,
right.
That right. has, I think, you know, left a lot of stories untold because it's just like not a lens everyone would have.
Well, and I think that's probably less the case for somebody now where we live in a world where in a lot, I'm not going to say everywhere, but like, there are a lot more, like, out same-sex couples now than when I was a teen. Like, I did not know an out gay adult at all until I was in college. So, like, there's just a different worldview in play now versus in the, like, 50s and 60s.
Right.
When, as you know, there was a gay, but the gay rights movement was becoming more visible to people who were not already part of it. Like that's still just like not a part of people's worldview necessarily. I think sometimes there are people on the internet who talk about it in like an incredibly dismissive way. And I'm like, it's not because historians are dummy dumbheads. It's that everybody is working within the cultural mm-hmm. framework that they are living in. And also, in a lot of cases, we are talking about people who, like, intentionally went through all of their own personal writings and destroyed all of the pages that referenced their partner.
Right.
Like, so anyway. Anyway, if you go read stuff about her that was written just forever ago, it's can be very different. I also just want to, once again, I recommended this on the show before, but there is a podcast called Sapiens. The fourth season of it is called Our Past is the Future, and it's all about how Black and Indigenous scholars are transforming the field of archaeology. There is some discussion of anthropology as related to it, and the last episode in particular talks about W. Montague Cobb, who we've covered on the show before, and the collection of human remains that he collected for study, and some conversation about like whether it is time to like lay all of those people to rest. So I highly recommend the whole season of that podcast. Based on my listening of that season, I feel like probably the whole rest of the podcast is great, but that is the only season of it that I have actually listened to. So anyway, if you're interested in how the field has changed and continues to change, through the influence of Black and Indigenous scholars, that is a thing to listen to. Happy Friday. Whatever's happening on your weekend, I hope it is great. I hope you don't make any embarrassing mistakes in public that can stick around for the rest of your life. We'll be back with a Saturday Classic tomorrow and on Monday with a brand new episode. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.